You're listening to ESL Podcasts English Cafe, number 313. This is English as a Second Language Podcast, English Cafe, episode 313. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff McQuillan, coming to you from the Center for Educational Development in beautiful Los Angeles, California. Visit our website at eslpod.com. Download this episode's learning guide, an 8 to 10 page guide we provide for all of our current episodes that gives you some additional help in improving your English. Don't forget about our ESL podcast store, which has some additional courses in business and daily English we think you will find interesting. On this cafe, we're going to talk about a very famous event in American history, in early American history, the Salem Witch Trials. We're also going to talk about an important organization here in the United States, the National Endowment for the Arts. And as always, we'll answer a few of your questions. Let's get started. We begin this cafe with a discussion about the Salem Witch Trials. A witch, W-I-T-C-H, is a person, always a woman, who is said to have magical supernatural powers. Supernatural is something that cannot be explained by the normal rules and laws, if you will, of science. The ability to know what someone else is thinking would be a supernatural power, or the ability to be at two places in one time would be supernatural. It's above the natural. Witches are supposed to have supernatural powers, and usually witches are considered evil in most Western cultures. We think of a witch as being an ugly old woman with a large nose, maybe some green skin, a black dress. You get the idea. Well, in the late 1600s, people were more likely to believe in these supernatural powers of witches, and we could say they believed in witches. This became especially notable or noticeable and important in February of 1692 and May of 1693, which is when the Salem Witch Trials took place. A trial, T-R-I-A-L, is the process where you have a judge and a group of people called a jury who decide whether someone has done something wrong, whether someone has broken the law, we would say. These particular trials were trying to determine whether certain women in the town of Salem were, in fact, witches. The trials happened in Salem Town and a few other cities in what would later become the state of Massachusetts in the northeastern part of the United States. It all started in 1692 when the 9-year-old daughter of a church leader and her 11-year-old cousin began to have fits. A fit, F-I-T, describes what happens when you lose control of your body and your actions for a short period of time. It might be caused by an illness such as epilepsy. Today we also talk about a fit of laughter, describing a short period of time when you are laughing so hard, so much you can't stop. Well, in the late 1600s, these girls started to have different kinds of fits. They screamed, they made strange noises, threw things, and did other things that people thought were strange and unexpected. The doctors couldn't find any physical or medical explanation for the girls' behavior, although one has to remember, this is 1692, so medicine is not as advanced as it is today. Soon after, other girls in Salem and nearby towns began to have similar fits, and people began to look for supernatural explanations. Church leaders began to say that there were witches who were afflicting the girls. To afflict, A-F-F-L-I-C-T, means to have a negative effect on someone, to hurt someone, to make someone suffer. We say that someone is afflicted with a disease. Well, in 1692, people were saying that witches were afflicting these girls using their supernatural powers to make them suffer. Three women were accused of being witches. Sarah Good was a woman who was poor. We would probably call her homeless today. Sarah Osborne was a woman who didn't go to church or church meetings. And Tituba, who was a slave girl, she told the girls wild stories and taught them about fortune telling, or how things would happen in the future, how to predict what would happen in the future. So all three of these women could be considered outcasts. An outcast, O-U-T-C-A-S-T, one word, is someone that doesn't really belong to a certain society. It was easier to accuse these women of being witches since they weren't really part of the community or were not a strong part of the community. But soon after, the accusations spread to other people, even people who were active members of the church and the community. In one Salem town court, more than 150 people were accused of being witches and were actually put in jail, in prison. There were 26 who had a trial, and they were all convicted or found guilty. As a result of these convictions in the two main courts, 19 people were killed by hanging, which means that they tie a rope around your neck and then they make you stand perhaps on a chair or something, and they kick the chair from underneath you and you, of course, die. 5 of the 26 died in prison. There was a man who was also accused of having these supernatural powers. We might call him a warlock or perhaps a sorcerer. He was killed when the court put heavy rocks on him, trying to get him to say that he was a warlock or a male witch, if you will. The Salem witch trials are often referred to as an example of mass hysteria. Something that is mass, M-A-S-S, here means widespread that many people are involved. Hysteria is a period of time when people sort of go crazy. They don't quite understand something, and they all begin to react in a very negative way. The Salem witch trials were an example of mass hysteria as people began to look for explanations of things that were happening and found the easiest explanation was that there were witches in the community. People began to blame these witches not only for the young girls' fits, but also for illnesses, poor harvests, that is, when the plants would not grow for food, and other things. Of course, anyone could be accused of being a witch, and it's very hard to defend yourself against these accusations when people say that you've done something wrong, especially if they believe the powers you have are supernatural. Today, the Salem witch trials are used as an example of times when people are looking for explanations and perhaps begin to accuse many people of doing things wrong without a lot of evidence. This happens when people need an explanation of something bad that is happening in the world. In 1953, one of the more famous American playwrights, someone who writes plays, Arthur Miller, wrote a play called The Crucible about the Salem witch trials. We actually talked about that back in the learning guide for English Cafe 299. It's interesting because it makes people think about how mass hysteria, such as what was seen at the Salem witch trials, could also be an explanation for the popularity of McCarthyism. McCarthyism was a period in the early 1950s when many people were accused of being communists, something we talked about also in English Cafe 299. There's a related expression, a witch hunt. A witch hunt would be literally going out and looking for, trying to find witches. Today the expression is used when people go and try to find someone guilty, try to blame someone, even though there isn't a lot of evidence for the crime that they are being accused of. We might talk about a political witch hunt. It's often used to describe what is really a purge, P-U-R-G-E. A purge is when you try to get rid of something. In this case, get rid of people from an organization or usually the government. But in any case, the Salem witch trials are certainly a negative part of American history, but one from which we can probably learn some lessons. Now let's turn to our next topic, which is the National Endowment for the Arts, or the NEA. An endowment, E-N-D-O-W-M-E-N-T, is a large amount of money that is usually given to, say, a school or perhaps another charitable organization. The endowment is sort of like a big savings account at a bank. It's a large amount of money that is used to help people or help an organization do the things it wants to do. Typically, the endowment itself is not spent, but rather the interest on the endowment. So you invest the money in things that will give you money back or simply give you interest, as in a bank account, And then you spend that money, so the endowment doesn't get spent itself. Theoretically, that's what happens, although in some cases endowments actually spend part of what we might call their capital, their main savings. The National Endowment for the Arts is a U.S. government agency or organization. It was created in 1965 to help support artists and their work, to bring art to the American people, and to provide leadership in arts education. In order to do these things, the NEA makes grants to artists and art organizations. A grant, G-R-A-N-T, is the amount of money that is given to someone for a particular purpose. The money in a grant does not have to be paid back or given back. If you have to pay it back, we would call that a loan. But grants are like gifts. You don't have to return them. The National Endowment for the Arts has given away more than $4 billion since it began in the mid-1960s. There are three types of grants. One is a grant for art projects. A second is called National Initiatives. These are programs that the NEA sponsors itself, I believe. And partnership agreements. The grant money is given to those involved in dance, design, literature, music, theater, opera, museums, and so forth. Of course, art can be very subjective, meaning that different people have different ideas about what is art. It's not really possible to say that one piece of art is good and another is bad. At least some people believe that's true. Because art is subjective, there have been debates about that, of course. When the U.S. government provides financial support for artists and their work, sometimes that can be controversial, meaning people often have strong opinions for or against the money, the government money, that is being given for different artistic projects. Sometimes these grant decisions have political consequences, meaning that politicians get involved. In 1990, there were four artists who later became known as the NEA4 who were awarded grants by the NEA. However, the leader of the NEA, the chairman, said no to the grants. He denied them because he thought their work was too controversial, the work of the artist, that is. The artists took their case to the Supreme Court. They went to the legal system and eventually got their grant money. Some presidents have tried to get rid of the NEA altogether. In 1981, then President Ronald Reagan tried to abolish or end the existence of the NEA, but that failed. In 1989, several organizations attacked or criticized the NEA because they thought they were giving money to anti-Christian artists. And between 1995 and 1997, many politicians spoke out against the NEA for providing funding or money to controversial artists or for spending government dollars in wasteful ways. The NEA is often criticized, but it does play an important role in the funding of American artists and art education in the U.S. However, it's important to understand that it is not like it is in many, for example, European countries, where the government provides a lot more support to artists, at least in some of those countries. Here in the United States, only about 13% of the financial support for the arts comes from the government, and only 9% comes from the national or federal government. The NEA, they contribute about 1%. In general, many other governments provide a lot more financial support than the U.S. government does. Some people think that is wrong, that the government should give more money to artists. Other people think that the artists should get money from other places and not from the taxpayer, not from the person paying taxes. There's no real answer to that one. So let's instead try to answer some of your questions. Our first question comes from Katsuya, K-A-T-S-U-Y-A, in Japan. Katsuya wants to know the difference between the phrases in fact and as a matter of fact. Well, let's start with the word that is in common, that is the same in the two expressions, which is fact. A fact is something that is true, something that exists. Matter is the subject of your thoughts or your feelings. Matter can also be something that is physical, that takes up space, that you can feel or see. You have this idea of truth, you have this idea of existence in the words fact and matter. So it's not surprising that the expressions in fact and as a matter of fact both mean in truth or actually. You don't have a match to light my cigarette, do you? And the person may respond, as a matter of fact, I do. Or in fact, I do. We use these two expressions in response to a question or when someone expresses a doubt. They're used in formal and informal situations. It's often the case that we use these to say the opposite of what the person is telling us or what the person thinks. You might say, you don't speak Italian, do you? And if you do speak Italian, you would say, as a matter of fact, I do. I do speak Italian. Or, in fact, I do speak Italian. Parlo italiano. You see? A little Italian. Sometimes the expressions can be used as a way of emphasizing or extending an idea. I'm going to go to Hawaii. In fact, I'm going to go next week. The idea that I'm going next week is related to the idea that I'm going. It provides some additional information. So that's also a use of in fact or as a matter of fact. Shimara, Ximara, from the Dominican Republic, wants to know the difference between even, E-V-E-N, and even though. Even is a word that we use often for emphasis, to make the meaning of other words stronger. It can be used in formal or informal situations. The smell of the food made me feel even sicker, more sick than I was going to be otherwise. So there it means in a stronger way. Even can also be used to mean at the same time when it is combined with the word as. Even as we stood watching, the fire destroyed the building. Even though is used more often as a conjunction, like although, or simply though. Even though her mother was sick, she still made Thanksgiving dinner for us. Or, I'm going to go to the store, even though it is raining, despite the fact that it is raining. So even is used for emphasis. He is even going to wash my car. That's how nice he is. Even though is used as a conjunction, meaning although. Even though it rained today, he is still going to wash my car. Finally, Wagner, V-A-G-N-E-R, not spelled the same as the composer, which is W-A-G-N-E-R. This is a completely different Wagner. Wagner, from an unknown country, wants to know the meaning of the phrase, look at. For example, a professor in front of his or her class might say, let's look at the history of California. Look at there means let's consider, let's talk about, let's discuss. Or you could say economics looks at the role of markets and human behavior. Economic studies is about, considers these issues or topics. Look at could also be used to mean turn your eyes and look at something in a certain direction. Look at that guy walking down the street. He has a funny hat on. He looks like a Viking. Or you could say, look at that beautiful woman. No, you shouldn't say that if you're married, of course. Look at can also mean to read something, but read it very quickly. You sit down and you are at a restaurant. You may say, let me take a look at the menu. There it really means let me look, let me see the menu, let me read the menu. We can even say, let me take a quick look at the menu, meaning I am not going to look at it very carefully. So there are these three meanings: to consider, to study, to examine. Look at can also mean to look in a certain direction or to look at something or someone specifically. And finally, it can mean to read, often very quickly and not very carefully. If you have a question or comment, in fact, if you have anything you would like to tell us, you can email us. Our email address is ESLPOD@ESLPOD.com. We can't answer all the questions, but we will definitely take a look at them. From Los Angeles, California, I'm Jeff McQuillan. Thank you for listening. Come back and listen to us again here on The English Cafe. ESL Podcast English Cafe is written and produced by Dr. Jeff McQuillan and Dr. Lucy Say. Copyright 2011 by the Center for Educational Development.